think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 130 of Low Limit Football on this August 22nd, 2016. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and back after we have kicked off four of the five major leagues in Europe. In England, we saw last week's winners, Liverpool, hold 80% of the possession against Burnley. Will it be enough to get the win? Sergio Aguero added two more goals to his season tally as well, jumping out to an early lead in the EPL goal scoring race. In France, we saw Alexander Lacazette net another two goals, making Arsene Wenger's mouth water, but probably making his pockets a little emptier. We also saw Toulouse's Braithwaite score a goal, donating $1,000 to charity with that goal. Serie A kicked off this weekend with the champs doing what they normally do, championship-type stuff. Carlos Bacca adds three goals to open the account for AC Milan. Will it be enough, or will we need Gigi Donnarumma to come up with something big late to preserve the win for AC Milan? And Spain also kicked off this weekend to the tone of 34 goals in 8 matches, helped on by a 10-goal Sevilla barn burner against Espanyol. I guess Jorge Sampaoli has completely thrown defense out the window. Tonight, though, we will open our Bundesliga account. We will preview the Bundesliga with Stefan Bienkowski. Stefan coming to us from the New York Times and Washington Post to help us open that season up. So glad to be back and talk to everyone tonight. We've got a great episode coming up. We also have one more episode coming up next week before our big 3-year anniversary show. We are adding people left and right to the guest list. We'll make an announcement as to another guest that was added at the end of the show. So I hope everyone has enjoyed the week of football. Let me get my co-hosts in here right now, heading down to Mr. Rojas. Rob, what is going on, man?
I'm doing well, Joe. It's a fantastic weekend that we saw with the start of the Premier League, Serie A, the La Liga, and everything else. But now we have one more league to cover, and hopefully it's going to be just as good as the beginning as it was for the other four leagues.
You know, my opening ramble, I forgot to mention Luis Suarez doing Luis Suarez stuff, right?
Oh yeah, totally. He's absolutely on fire.
Another three goals for him, two more for Messi as well. I mean, there's just been a barrage of goals.
Who said this sport is boring?
Yeah, well, people that didn't watch the Espanyol match this weekend, that's for sure. So let's head up to the Great White North and find out from Mr. Aguero's number one fan, how things are going. Mike, what's up?
Did anyone pick him to win the EPL title?
Well, people picked City. I don't think we picked him specifically.
No, the Golden Boot.
Yeah.
The Golden Boot. I can't remember if anyone picked him.
We did. Yeah, I think it was both of you.
He took Harry Kane with a side of Sergio Aguero just to cover him, hedge himself.
That's 100%. Awesome, with a side of Sergio Aguero. Yeah.
I'm actually, but I was laughing when our old co-host Ben was saying he looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. I seen an interview with Ryan Giggs as a pundit this weekend, and he certainly was the Ryan Giggs of old when he said that the Premier League is a war of nutrition.
A war of nutrition.
War of nutrition.
Wonderful.
Yes, a war of nutrition. Not attrition, but nutrition.
Get your fruits and veggies, kids. Rob and
stay
I
in
both...
school, kids. Stay in school.
Stay in school. Rob and I picked Harry Kane. You, sir, took Mr. Aguero. We all three of us had different champions for the EPL. I took Chelsea. You took City. Rob took United. So I thought I picked Zlatan for that. But, oh, well, Harry Kane it is. I said it on the air, and that's what I'm going with. So that'll do it. But, yeah, so Mr. Aguero, what's he at now? Three leading the way for the EPL? I mean, it's obviously early. We don't even bother talking about that stuff. Is he on four right now for the season?
No, three. So. He's
got like three in the Champions League. He's doing well.
Yeah.
Five. He has five in the last three games.
Right. So, well, you know.
Just a few penalties. So, yeah, the 100-goal thing that he would have with Barcelona, I still stand with it.
Alexander Lacazette, five in two games for Lyon.
Arsenal must be kicking themselves.
Oh, my God. Arsene Wenger. I swear, every time Lacazette walks onto the pitch at Lyon, it must cost Wenger an extra $2 million. The minute he touches the ball, it costs him an extra $3 million. And I can't even imagine what happens when he actually scores a goal. Wenger must be spending all that TV money like on the spot because he needs to. They looked awful this week. Arsenal was terrible this week. Liverpool was not that good this week, right? 80% of the possession against Burnley. 80% you lose 2-0. That's crazy. I know, Mike, I know you don't hold that in high regard, that stat, the possession stat, but my God.
Well, possession when you're not doing anything with it is not, you know, that's negative.
I'd say 80% is shameful, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
So, Edmund Neeson in the chat. Edmund, glad to see you in the chat room tonight, and I hope you enjoy the show, man. So, Mike, let's give it to you for the opening trivia question. Go ahead and make us dumb again, man.
Okay, well, this one probably sounds a lot harder than it is. I think if you think about it, you can probably come up with at least three or four of the five. Okay. Name the only capped international player to win a Premier League from the following countries. So that means only one player from each of these countries has ever won. So Algeria, Bulgaria, Romania, Switzerland, and Jamaica.
Okay, the Jamaica one's easy.
So the only international cap player to have won Premier Leagues from the following countries: Algeria, Bulgaria, Romania, Switzerland, and Jamaica.
Got them. Well, three of them. I never think of.
I think I have two. Switzerland. All right, I'm gonna have to think about that one because I don't think Shaqiri has won an EPL title. So,
well, the good thing is you got lots of time to think about it.
Hopefully, we'll figure it out, right? So, well, you know, since we're talking about championship stuff, right? Let's talk about tonight's opening thoughts topic. And Mike, you know what? You gave us the topic this week, so I'd like you to introduce it because I think it's a great topic and certainly worth discussing. And when I was doing my homework on it, I was kind of interesting points I found. So why don't you go ahead and introduce it to us?
Okay, I think the way I proposed the topic to you was proposed changes to the Champions League. Is it a good thing? And the proposed changes, of course, are there will be four guaranteed spots to the top five leagues in Europe. And then I guess the other 12 it would be, right? Yeah, 12 will be made up of the other leagues.
No, 16. 16.
16? 36, yeah, is it?
32.
So 20 plus 12. 5 times 4 is 20.
No, because we're four, because you get four spots in the four major leagues.
Oh, four major leagues. Yeah, I was saying five. Okay, so 16 and 16. Okay, so still a proposed change that the teams that already had a chance to get four will no longer have to go through a playoff.
Right.
And I guess teams like Italy that were guaranteed three, I think,
correct,
and maybe one through the playoff. Is that how it works for them right now?
Two.
Two and one through the playoff, I mean, right?
Right,
yes.
So, and now they'll be guaranteed four. Germany will be guaranteed four, and Spain will be guaranteed four, and the other 16 will be made up from
the rest of the champions.
Rest of, yeah, and I suppose it's even possible one of them leagues could have five if they won the Europa and got in that way.
That's right, and that was what I was thinking as well. So, Rob, I'm going to let you hit this one first. What are your thoughts on this one overall?
For me, I think what we've seen in the last few years is that there's a lot of parity in the Champions League, not only in champions, but teams that have performed well in the Champions League. I think that when you look at a league such as France, who I believe would not be in that top four, if I'm correct.
Correct, they're fifth.
They're fifth. So you have teams like PSG and Lyon having to fight a playoff for the Champions League, which for a lot of people would be absolutely crazy, because you would see PSG as the first top seed in the Champions League. But I think what Mike has always been going on for a few years is that the Champions League should be narrowed down with teams that are with a few teams from a few countries that would be the champion and the runner-up from each nation, and I guess the remaining, so it's 32 top four, that's 20, I'm just trying to think here, that's, so the remaining 16 leagues, if I'm not mistaken?
Mm-hmm.
So the remaining 16 league champions would have to play in a playoff, but...
Well, they would get in.
Yes, so, they would get in.
So they would have to fight to
go into the group stage.
Right, your PSGs would get in still, your Portos, if they won the Portuguese league, I think would still get in. Your Ajaxes, if they won, would still get in. Mm-hmm. Mike, I just want to make sure that I'm not mistaken in what you've said in the past, that you wanted the Champions League pared down because there were too many teams. So not necessarily that we get the fourth place team from England. In fact, if I remember right, you thought that having the fourth place team from England is kind of a little bit of a joke, or fourth place, I shouldn't say England, but fourth place team from any league is kind of a joke.
Even the third place team, Joe, and yeah. I know this year Manchester City wouldn't be in my Champions League.
Yeah, but I want to make sure that was the case. That
yeah, no, that yeah. is, yeah, you're pretty much right on there.
So, I don't think this kind of gears it towards what you're looking for, Mike, because you're still,
no.
right, but...
I don't know how you have a Champions League and call it a Champions League when you have four teams from one league.
I think you would actually prefer to have the first place winners from each league and be done with.
Yeah, maybe the second place. I understand money and how that works. But, some of these teams, like Manchester City's not a champion. Why are they in the Champions League?
Well, you said the key word, though. You said the key word, money. And I think this goes back to, and even Gab Marcotti pointed it out in his ESPN article, this goes back to those quote-unquote secret meetings that a lot of those top clubs were having about making their own Super League and kind of separating themselves from UEFA. So this is UEFA's way of kind of protecting that money, because in the end, this is all TV contracts. This is, ESPN wants to give us $1 billion for the Champions League broadcast in the United States or North America. That's what this is about.
But is this a case of the big teams moving all in with like 7-2 on a weird board that's just not coordinated and hoping
no,
you will fold?
I don't think so, because the big teams have enough money. I mean, think about it. Let's talk.
Right, but that's what I mean. Like, they to start their own league, are they really going to do that? Do you think if they were going to, were they going to do that?
I think if the money was there, they would. I think
it would get boring pretty quick.
I think they would treat the EPL or they would treat La Liga as the secondary league at that point. To be honest with you, mm-hmm. I think it all goes back to the money. Whether it got boring or not, you're going to see the best players.
Is it going to be set up like a tournament, or would it be set up like a real league?
I think it'd be set up like a league. I think it would
okay,
be set
well,
up.
Well, that's
like,
less boring. I'll give them that.
I think it would be set up like a Champions League. I would imagine.
No, like a Champions League or a domestic league.
Like a domestic league. I'm sorry, but it would be but Juventus.
Okay,
would
that's less boring.
Would travel to City. That kind of thing. And
you would play each team once
exactly.
or twice, once and all, just like
home and away, just
yeah,
like a regular
okay.
league.
That would be less boring, but.
Yeah,
that's not what is going to happen, right? We were talking about what might have happened.
Right. Now the other part of this thing was there was kind of a wild card even put into the proposal for the legacy team.
Oh, that's a joke.
Well, yeah, you know what that is. That is the Manchester United / AC Milan rule. That's
or Liverpool for that matter.
Or Liverpool for that matter. Because
more so Liverpool, I'd say, because Manchester United not being in the Champions League unless it continues is... a one-off, I think.
Right. Well, you
Liverpool
know,
not being in it, yeah.
But you know, in the end, when you're talking about money and you're talking about TV contracts, look at the worldwide followings that these teams have, the Liverpools, the AC Milans, the Manchester Uniteds of the world. They have such a far-reaching fan base around the world that would be money lost. I mean, you're going to get a Sporting Braga versus an FC Copenhagen in the Champions League. Nobody really wants to see that money-wise in terms of a TV contract. So what do you want? You want AC Milan. AC Milan outdraws all those teams. So AC Milan stinks or has stunk for the past few years. Liverpool, I don't even want to say that Liverpool stinks, but they have not been there. They've not been the same team.
And in fairness, both of those teams, even though you say, I'm using quotations here, stink, mm-hmm. Are better than Malmo.
Yes. Sure, you put you
right
put,
or better than you know some of these other teams that I can't Bate and
yeah, I mean you put AC Milan out there. This AC Milan team as constructed versus Bate, I think most of the bookies would have Milan as the winner,
right?
You know, even
so,
on a neutral pitch. So I mean, yeah, I think that's that, you know, that's kind of what they're looking at. They want to get
which,
rid of the,
which is if they're going to do the four team thing. I don't like it, but they're going to do that. Obviously, I believe it's pretty much already done. It's just a matter of being rubber stamped. This legacy thing's not for me, though.
No, my question about this whole process, and I didn't see it addressed in Gab's.
Actually, have one thing.
Yeah, what?
How would if this did go ahead? How would the seeding work? Would it work by where they finish?
Probably.
Instead of coefficient?
I would imagine so. I would imagine they take the top the top champions and they move them. Maybe even the top first and second in those leagues or you know, or they do it by team coefficient.
It really takes away from the cyclical part of soccer though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas the leagues they you know, one league's good now, but in 5 years, you know, France is better than them again. Yeah. You know, it takes away from that.
My worry is that I think we've seen a rebirth of the Europa League over the past couple years, where now it has been something that has become important because it holds a golden ticket to the Champions League. Sevilla obviously cashing in on it the last 3 years.
It's like Willy Wonka.
Yeah, and no, it is true. They opened up the chocolate bar and got the golden ticket, right? But
yep.
So now, but what we've also seen is we've kind of seen the English sides, for the most part, Liverpool excluded from last year, we've seen the English sides kind of poo-poo the Europa League, where we've seen a lot of the Italian clubs embrace the Europa League, which has helped that whole coefficient thing, help them kind of climb the ranks to where they are in danger of knocking out the English side of that extra seat.
Is that really what has happened, or do some of the English teams just aren't that good?
No, I would disagree with that. I don't think that they're that just not that good. I think that, you know, you'd have to look at the teams that they put on the pitch in those competitions. And I think for the most part, the Italians were putting out their A squads and the English teams were putting out their B squads. And that's where the difference lies. So now do we see something like this, where this rule change happens, where because those Italian teams and those English teams and those Spanish teams are guaranteed those spots into the Champions League group stages, do we see them kind of back off of that? Or do you see them maybe the fifth through eight teams, the Sassuolos of the world, who are actually doing really well in the Europa League right now, do we see the Sassuolos of the world actually look at this and go, you know what, this is better for us because it allows us to, it removes the possible Liverpools and it removes the possible Man Uniteds and the one-offs that didn't get in. It removes them from this competition. Now we have less competition in front of us where we can make a run at that guaranteed spot. So, I mean, do you think this helps Europa or do you think this hurts them? Either one of you.
Helps.
You think it helps? Okay.
Helps. Yeah.
Yeah, I could look at it from both sides, but I think it does help in the end, which would be a good
thing. I think in the case of the English teams, it's not a matter that they don't – it's just that staying or being well, in some cases, some of these teams that make it to Europa are close to the relegation zone some years in England. It's just so much more important that you stay in the top league in England than anything else.
Right.
Just given the TV money that you're going to get every year from being in the Premier League as opposed to getting relegated and getting dropped down to the Championship.
Sure.
But even the Championship, you know, is now competing with a lot of the leagues for players and transfer fees.
They are. They are, and that's and that was part of the article as well. Was that, you know, that part of the issue was that a lot of these championship teams, because of the influx of TV money, have been able to compete with the signings of some of these players from some of like these mid-table Italian or German or even Spanish teams, because the money is so different between the two of them. So,
I guess the Champions League is what it is, but for me, it's really not a Champions League as such.
Right.
It's another league, but it's not the Champions League.
And the fact that they put the fourth place team in probably still contributes to that idea, I would say, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess it's just, okay. You know what it really boils down to? The rich are getting richer.
Yeah, yeah, but that's...
And they want to make sure they stay there.
That's and that's exactly it, and that's what they kind of wanted to do, so... So, gentlemen, I'm going to put the closing the cap on our opening thoughts topic, and I'm going to welcome in tonight's guest to help us break down the Bundesliga from the New York Times and the Washington Post, Stefan Biankowski. Stefan, welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
Hi, guys. It's a pleasure to join you. I'm doing very well. Thanks.
Great, and you sound great. So I think the sound is going to be perfect for us. So I want to open the questioning with you, not with Dortmund. Not with Bayern Munich. Everybody always wants to talk about Bayern Munich. I kind of want to talk about Dortmund and indirectly Bayern Munich. Dortmund finished 10 points back of Bayern Munich last year in the Bundesliga title race. And for me, they were right into it right up until they played that last match. I think it was sometime around mid-March where they had an opportunity to close the gap to 2 points and they weren't successful in doing it. Now, Rafa Honigstein, who we think is one of the premier Bundesliga pundits, let's say, has picked Dortmund to win the Bundesliga this year, despite them finishing 10 points back. Has Dortmund done enough in this transfer window to close that gap and actually make it a race this year?
I think that's quite a brave decision by Rafa, who is a journalist that I have the utmost respect for, simply because there's no way of knowing how this Dortmund team are going to play this season. I think fans and obviously journalists like to be off the play hand in the transfer window have been fabulous, and I think they've actually probably done as any club can do in terms of, you know, selling three world-class players who were for large parts the spine of Dortmund's team over the last few seasons. But like I said, the potential is there in terms of players like Dembele and Bartra, but it comes down to whether Dortmund can actually bring these players in and can actually make sure that they hit the ground running. Now, I think perhaps part of the reason why Rafa might be saying that is because they have a coach like Thomas Tuchel who has really himself hit the ground running when he arrived at Dortmund last season. He picked up a team under Jurgen Klopp that seemed to have completely run out of ideas. Klopp, for all his merit, really only had one or two as to how he actually played his side, and once that stopped working, things started to fall apart. And despite he has from Dortmund fans for what he achieved at the club, he really did leave that team in all sorts of a mess. They still had the players, but it needed someone to come in and completely start again. Now, usually in the modern game, that takes a few seasons. We've seen that, for example, with Chelsea, Manchester United. When a big manager leaves, you just don't have the time and the patience to take your time with these things. But Thomas Tuchel came in last season and he got the team playing very well, playing his style of football, and it looked like the players were really interested in playing for him. And as you quite correctly said, they really did keep up with Bayern for much of the season. Ultimately, they didn't finish. The league table on the final match day, if someone hadn't watched the season all year and decided to take a look at them at last match day, it perhaps would have suggested that Dortmund were nowhere near Bayern. But for, you know, at least three quarters of the season, they were. They didn't win, they didn't beat Bayern last season in the league, and that's something I think they definitely will have to do this season if they want to finish above them. But I think the progress that Tuchel made was absolutely remarkable, and there's every reason to think that he can do that again this season with a whole new bunch of players. And he's been really quite smart in the transfer market in terms of he hasn't just bought three players to replace three players. He's signed a number of players. We've seen Andre Schürrle come in, Mario Götze, Moussa Dembele. These three players aren't specifically individually brought in to replace Gundogan or to replace Mkhitaryan. They will form an attacking team that will take turns to to win games and then hopefully at the end of the season win titles. So it's a hugely exciting time. And I think if it was any other coach, I would perhaps be a little more skeptical for Dortmund. But under Thomas Tuchel, there's every chance that he can make things click very quickly.
Certainly. I certainly agree. I'm going to send you over to Mike Orr. Mike, I know, has some questions as well. And then when we get back to me, I'm going to pick your brain about the Americans playing in Germany. So, Mike, go ahead and take it away.
Hi, Stefan. It's Mike in Toronto. Thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.
Well, I'm going to start with Bayern Munich. I know Joe didn't want to, so I will. recently, Carlo Ancelotti has said that Bayern do not need to add to their squad. But with the roster injuries and stars such as Ribery, Robin, Alonso, and Philipp Lahm nearing the end of their career and appearing not to have a top-level alternative in attack for star striker Robert Lewandowski, is Ancelotti right that they don't need to add?
I think that's an interesting question. I think, obviously, fans in the US were probably quite excited by the thought, you know, the idea of Julian Green. He played quite a prominent role in the preseason tour, and he seemed to do quite well as well, to his credit. But I think that perhaps was an illustration of the fact that should something happen to Robert Lewandowski or Thomas Müller, Bayern Munich are really lacking options up front. You know, all credit to Julian Green, he's still a young player who has a huge amount of potential. But he's nowhere near ready to step up to a position to replace Robert Lewandowski. I would quite happily argue that no one in Europe can actually do what Robert Lewandowski does on his day. So that's certainly something to consider. I think in terms of Frank Ribéry and Arjen Robben, I'd be far more inclined to agree with Ancelotti simply because this is a problem that Pep Guardiola had to deal with over the course of his three seasons. When Arjen Robben was fit, he was outstanding, and you could actually argue that the season before last, Arjen Robben's injury actually would have went a long way to costing him a Champions League title. He was the key man. He was the match winner, especially in the Champions League. And when he got injured just around April, May time, that's when the wheels really began to fall off. Frank Ribéry, on the other hand, despite being just as an outstanding player, spent large parts of Pep Guardiola's tenure at Bayern Munich on the injury list. And it actually got to a point where Pep simply had to just address the fact that he would have to pick his team each season without Frank Ribéry. And that's why we saw Douglas Costa come in and Kingsley Coman. So at least on the wings, we have adequate cover. But as you know, as you suggested, there's perhaps space up top that could be filled. But in this day and age, it's so hard to find a player who can step in for, you know, a player like Lewandowski for maybe 5 or 6 games in the league campaign and still be quite content to sit on the bench. Bayern did have that a few seasons ago with Pizarro, but he's obviously moved on, and even at that, he's still quite a young player, quite an old player. So it's a hard thing to balance. And I think, to a large extent, I think Bayern's squad are still more than capable of winning the Bundesliga this season, and of course challenging in the Champions League. And that's where Carlo Ancelotti seems to have made his reputation. Who would I be to question that?
Okay, fair enough. One player you did mention there was Thomas Müller. There's been talk that his starting position could come under threat in Ancelotti's preferred 4-3-3 system. Can you see him adapting and playing on the right side as he did for Germany at the Euros and perhaps a little more successfully than he did for Germany?
Yeah, I think, well, just to mention that point there, I think after the European Championships, one of the things that I noted, I think a lot of people noted, I think a lot of Bayern fans were concerned, was a lot of the Bayern players for the German national team and for, you know, respective other nations, most of them looked really tired. And I think Thomas Müller and Robert Lewandowski, to a lesser extent, they both looked really, really jaded. They looked as though, you know, they just didn't have it in them. Obviously, they're both still outstanding athletes, but Thomas Müller, at least mentally, didn't look as sharp as he usually does. And for a player like Müller, who's, you know, most of his game is just his intelligence and the way he, you know, tackles space on the pitch, he didn't look like his old self. And I think a lot of Bayern fans were concerned whether that was going to carry on to this season. In the Super Cup game against Dortmund last weekend, we saw him looking something back to his best. He looked on the right-hand side, where he prefers to play. He looked back to his old self in the way that he was, even though on paper he was playing as a winger, he was rather an inside forward who really did just float around the pitch. And I thought that was quite interesting, because it not only showed that Thomas Müller was perhaps, once again, had regained his fitness and had some time off after for the championships, but also illustrated the differences in the coaching techniques between Carlo Ancelotti and Pep Guardiola, at least as far as I thought, in the sense that under Pep Guardiola, the players are so restricted to playing specific roles simply because that's just the way he plays his football. Everything has to be controlled. The entire system has to work like clockwork. Carlo Ancelotti is clearly far more relaxed. He's quite happy to pick an 11-man team. And, you know, he's still obviously a tactician, but he's quite happy to rely on these key players to do their thing. And I think that's exactly what we saw from Thomas Müller against Borussia Dortmund. He played as a right winger, but only really in name. He played as almost like a false number nine. He was playing off Lewandowski. He was floating all over the pitch, and he looked far freer than he ever had done under Pep Guardiola. And I think that's room for encouragement. I think Bayern fans would be really happy about that, because under Carlo Ancelotti, he seems to have a coach who's quite happy just to let him do his thing, and that's when Müller's at his best. So I think from the very little we've seen of Bayern so far this season under Ancelotti, I think the signs are good.
Okay, and do you think there's any chance that they'll play a 4-4-2 on some games with Müller up top with Lewandowski?
I'm not entirely sure. I think obviously the way tactics work these days is that these things can be so fluid on a pitch. Last season, eventually, almost behind Lewandowski, so I guess maybe something like a 4-4-1-1 for large parts, which would, I guess, technically would make a 4-4-2. And that's perfect to do this season, but from what I've seen, it looks as though Müller and Ancelotti are both happier seeing Müller play on the right-hand side, even though sometimes he might move inside. So I think we're more likely to see a 4-3-3 from Ancelotti, which, as far as I can tell, has been his preferred system, his preferred tactics over the course of his last few jobs. And it seemed to work quite well against Dortmund last weekend.
Yeah, true enough. I'm going to switch over to Werder Bremen now, having suffered their second setback in as many days with news that their new signing, Max Kruse, has torn ligaments. How serious a blow is this to a team that finished only 5 points above the drop zone last season?
Yeah, I think Max Kruse, he's had some really bad luck in the last year. A number of stories came out in the press in Germany about, let's just say, his personal life, difficulties in that regard, and distraction. Well, it's perhaps the most democratic way of putting it. And, you know, it cost him his job ultimately at Wolfsburg. You know, he was having constant trouble with the management there. They felt obliged to fine him and to cause all sorts of trouble, and that ultimately cost him his role in the German national team as well this summer, which is a shame because his style of, he is a player, the style of way he plays football is actually quite rare in Germany as, you know, a straightforward forward. So ultimately he had a bad season last year, and this move to Werder Bremen seemed to make a lot of sense. He was linked to a move to Turkey, and to one of the larger teams in the Turkish league, until the troubles recently, it seems, at least reported in Germany, it seemed that had changed his mind. And he ended up at Werder Bremen, which, despite their troubles, are still a huge club in Germany. And it looked as though that was a team that could really offer him a first team place every season. And that would mean that a first team place every week, rather. And that means he could play full football and get back to simply playing his football. Ultimately, that doesn't seem to be Pokal in the first round, which is quite embarrassing, to say the least. And then, of course, the injury to him is a huge, huge shocker. They relied a lot on Claudio Pizarro last season at 37 years old, and he's also injured at the moment. So I think any hope of Skripnik's team going into this new season, you know, with this feel-good feeling after avoiding relegation, has already taken at least one major blow.
Do you consider them candidates for relegation this season?
I think it's definitely plausible. I think, like I said, Max Kruse and Pizarro are both players with the utmost quality, proven quality in the Bundesliga. And if they can stay fit, then there's no reason why they simply can't score goals. The Bundesliga itself is, once you get below maybe the top 7 or 8 teams, it's really anyone's guess. Mention the fact that we have teams like Leipzig and Freiburg who have been promoted from the Zweite Bundesliga, who do have the Bundesliga pedigree. Leipzig on their own have signed the players that they need, and Freiburg have actually managed to hold on to many of the players they had when they were still in the league. So I'd be very surprised if those two teams were to get relegated, which means it puts pressure on the teams that are down there, which would mean that, for me, that means Werder Bremen, Ingolstadt and Darmstadt. And if Werder Bremen cannot get this team ticking well and they cannot get Max Kruse fit again, I know he's only out for 6 weeks, but that's still maybe four or five games around an international break. So I think they're absolutely, undoubtedly, they have to prove that they're no longer relegation candidates, and right now that doesn't seem to be the case. So I would not be surprised if we saw them in the relegation zone, or at least towards the playoff relegation spot come the end of the season.
Okay, fair enough. I got one more question for you before I give you to Rob, and thanks a lot for taking my questions again. One player seems set to benefit from a full month of summer training with his squad after having arrived last year when the season had already begun is Javier Chicharito Hernandez. How big of a role can he play this season in at least closing the gap between the big two and the third place?
I think Hernandez is an outstanding player. I think he proved that. I think a lot of people were actually quite surprised that Bayer Leverkusen were able to sign him, considering the crazy amount of money that goes flying around, especially in the Premier League these days, for very average footballers. For Leverkusen to sign him last season for such a nominal fee was simply outstanding. And he is, you know, he's repaid them in leaps and bounds. I think outside of Dortmund and Bayern, he is clearly the best striker in the Bundesliga. And I think Leverkusen in general are actually probably at least the third strongest squad. And that means that, you know, if they can keep on form, if they can stay consistent, and perhaps most importantly, if they can make sure that they pick up points in the big games against Bayern, Dortmund, and even the other teams in the top four like Gladbach, which they didn't do last season, there's absolutely no reason why they shouldn't be at least challenging Dortmund for second place, if we can suggest that Dortmund may finish second under Bayern. It's a really exciting time at Leverkusen right now. While we've seen Dortmund having to give up their star players, and Schalke to an extent give up their players, Leverkusen have done really well to not only hold on to Hernandez, who was reportedly suggesting last season that he had a release clause in his contract if they didn't reach the top four and qualify for Champions League. So they've held on to him, they've held on to other key players, and they've also brought in more talent. So I think things look really good for Leverkusen at the moment, and Chicharito is absolutely at the heart of that as one of the best players in the league.
Yeah, I think it should be a little more interesting this year between the top two and maybe the third and fourth place teams. Stefan, thanks again, and here's Rob.
Hey, Stefan, it's Roberto Rojas here in Connecticut. I guess I'll start off my questions with Borussia Dortmund. We saw the return of Mario Götze to the team where he started his career, and a lot of people have said that he hasn't been the same ever since he moved to Bayern Munich 3 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. So I was just wondering, how do you think this move will help him get back on the track of his career, considering that he's still young and has all the he's still at the prime of his career? And also, how do you think this team will be post post Hendrik Mkhitaryan, who is a big loss to the team?
Yeah, I think ultimately on paper the move makes a lot of sense. Mario Götze, as you said, you know, he moved to Bayern Munich 3 seasons ago, and it simply didn't work for a number of reasons. The main one, it would seem, is that Pep Guardiola simply didn't want him. It suggested that Neymar was his preference. Bayern simply said, "Well, we have a German player for half the price, is just as good," and that didn't work out. I think that's largely because Pep Guardiola wants the player who could drive with the ball, who could dribble, who can most importantly skip past players. He was absolutely desperate for players like that, which is why we saw players like Costa and Kingsley Coman sign later on. And to put it bluntly, Götze didn't feature in Pep Guardiola's plans at all, and that's why we saw him play much of his tenure at Bayern Munich on the bench, despite for large parts of it playing relatively well for the German national team. He now returns to Dortmund, and on paper it makes perfect sense, although a number of the fans are still adamant that they're not happy about his return. I think it's probably quite safe to assume that once he starts scoring goals and winning games, perhaps particularly against Bayern Munich, then we might really see the fans quite happily turn around and simply say, okay, right, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. And like I said earlier on, he joins a team that have a number of attacking options. I think he will play a key role. I don't think Dortmund can sign a player for that amount of money, and without being able to convince him that you know, he will play first team football. As you said, he's now approaching the prime years in his career, and I think that means we'll probably likely see him play a number 10 role in Thomas Tuchel's side. Against Bayern last week, we saw Shinji Kagawa playing that role, a player who was actually largely brought in and did quite well to replace Götze when he first left for Bayern Munich. But I think long term, that's Götze's position if he can play up to the role, and I think he can. He returned to Dortmund this summer with fitness concerns, but it seems as though Thomas Tuchel has really talked him into getting his head down and working. You have to remember that this is a player who in Germany is very much regarded as something of you know, a celebrity personality. He was recording his own rap, for example. He's got the model girlfriend, and more often than not on television in the games, he spends large points of it fixing his hair. He's arrived at Dortmund, and within a couple of years, he's been told to shave his head. So that kind of gives you a suggestion as to how much he, or at least the club, are quite happy to say, right, now it's time to get down to business. To answer the second part of your question as to where Dortmund will look to line up this season, that's really anyone's guess. I mean, as I said, they've got a huge amount of options. I mean, I think Aubameyang will clearly be the front man, and like, we'll most likely see Mario Götze starting as a number 10 role. I think Dembele has been outstanding since he joined the club. I think Thomas Tuchel likes him. And I think that also means we'll probably have someone like Andreas Schürrle on the right-hand side. Schürrle isn't perhaps the most favourable player for Dortmund fans, but he is a player who has, you know, Bundesliga pedigree, and he knows how to win games. He's not the most exciting player, but he did a reasonably good job at Wolfsburg last season, and he actually did a reasonably good job at Chelsea as well before they sold him. So I think, like I said earlier on, I think things will be exciting to see for Dortmund, how they hit the ground running, and Mario Götze will play a large part in that in terms of whether he's willing to add on track.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what players such as Mario Götze and, as the aforementioned, Andreas Schürrle will do at their new clubs. Sticking now to two certain players who are playing in the Bundesliga, and I don't know how much you've seen them play, but I just want your valid opinion on Raúl Bobadilla of Augsburg and Dario Lescano of Ingolstadt.
If I'm going to be honest, I haven't seen much of either of them, if I'm honest with you. It really would come down to how both are likely to play. Ingolstadt are a team who have lost a number of important players this season, so it really depends and see whether you can actually come into the team and actually really help. That team, they've signed a number of specific players to replace players who have moved on, for example, to have moved on to Leverkusen, and it seems as though it's a team that has to be entirely rebuilt. So that looks as though it really comes down to whether or not they can step up and make a role. But in terms of specific roles, there's very little I can actually tell you about them, I'm afraid.
That's fine. I understand. 100%. I'll stick now again to Bayer Leverkusen as well. How much of a big effect is that? Does the player Hakan Çalhanoğlu have on Leverkusen?
Çalhanoğlu is an interesting player in terms of. He was signed from Hamburg as an attacking midfielder, and he's a player who, you know, he's proven at both clubs that he's an outstanding set piece taker. But he doesn't exactly fit Roger Schmidt's style of play, and it's quite interesting. But despite that, he still plays a large role in his team, despite the fact that Leverkusen under Schmidt are very ultra attacking, and they get in your face. They're actually quite reminiscent of Jürgen Klopp's former Dortmund side. They have two players in Çalhanoğlu and Kevin Campbell who are both former wingers, but who seem to be playing these they seem to be playing these defensive roles in midfield, and they quite almost like you know, defensive playmakers, I guess. Or God, maybe perhaps the best way to describe them is quarterbacks almost, in the sense that they're quite happy to just sit where they are in the middle of the pitch and just spray passes around. And for large parts of the season, that seems to work quite well. The problem is now that Hakan Çalhanoğlu doesn't seem to have the same mobility and the same physicality that other players offer. Kevin Campbell is no great athlete, but he's very tenacious in the way that he tries to get the ball back. And Leverkusen have a lot of players like that, but they also have players further up the field like Kevin Volland, who signed from Hoffenheim in the season, who is, you know, a specific goal scorer who can link up quite well with Chicharito. And you also have Julian Brandt, who's perhaps one of the most exciting young attacking players in the league this season. So Çalhanoğlu will have to continue impressing, and he may actually have to continue doing even more, because even though he has that specific role in Schmidt's side, and it does seem to work for large parts of the season, when it comes to the big games, and perhaps when it comes to real, whether or not, you know, Leverkusen can make that step up, I'm not entirely sure he's the player who will be playing in that first 11 alongside Kevin Campbell, and that remains to be seen. But he has specific key talents, and it's interesting to see how he does. But I think when you look at his Leverkusen team, there are perhaps more exciting players to pay attention to, and I think that in itself is something Çalhanoğlu will have to make sure he at least tries best to amend if he wants to stay in his Leverkusen team for the future.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be very interesting to see what he does this season and how much he can offer to this Leverkusen side. And I just have my last question for you, Stefan, before I pass it over to Joe, and thank you again. I just want your thoughts on how the player Renato Sanchez will affect this Bayern Munich team.
Sanchez is an interesting one. I obviously know very little of him from his time in the Portuguese league. I'm quite happy to admit I don't watch much Portuguese football. But we did see him for Benfica when they played Bayern Munich, and he was very impressive. And of course, he played very well for Portugal in the European Championships. And I'm really intrigued as to see how he performs for Bayern this season. He's still very young, but the fact is that they spent a huge amount of money on him. So that means that at one point or another, they're really going to want him to step into this team and start commanding a place. Where he plays, I'm not entirely sure. Bayern have spaces in the middle of the park that might need filled. Xabi Alonso is not getting any younger. But of course, I said that when he first signed for Bayern a few seasons ago, and he's proven me wrong largely since then. He seems to be capable of playing until he's 40, it would seem, just for that role he plays. And alongside him, you have players like Thiago Alcantara and Arturo Vidal, who are both two players, specifically Vidal, who played huge roles in Pep Guardiola's team. If we were to suggest that Renato's a central midfielder, which I think I'm okay in saying, although I think he seems to have the athleticism to perhaps play a wing role if necessary, I'm really intrigued to see who he knocks out of that central midfield spot. If he has been brought into the team and his expectations this season are simply, you know, to sit on the bench and to step in for Alonso or Alcantara, Thiago Alcantara, when needed, because both, and specifically Thiago, don't seem capable of playing entire league campaigns, then that's absolutely fine. He seems like the player who can come in. He can step up, and he offers that kind of, really valuable strength and depth. But whether or not he can actually, I think if anyone's expecting him to simply start every game for Bayern this season simply because they spent so much money on him, then I would really suggest to be cautiously optimistic there, because Bayern do have a settled side, and I don't think Ancelotti's the kind of player who's going to drop the likes of Thiago or Vidal or Alonso simply because the club have decided to sign this really young, really interesting young player.
Oh yeah, totally. It's going to be very fun to see what he does at this Bayern Munich side, and we just hope for the best for all fans of him. Stefan, I really want to thank you for coming on. It's been a real pleasure to talk Bundesliga with you. I'm going to pass it over to Joe.
Thanks, Rob. Stefan, I hope you do have a few more minutes. I wanted to ask you about a few Americans playing over in the Bundesliga, if that was okay.
Yeah, try your best.
Perfect. I think they're all layups, so they're pretty easy. Let's stick with the Bayern Munich part of this and look at Julian Green. He had a great performance in the International Champions Cup here in the United States in the preseason. I actually was at the match in Charlotte where he scored 3 goals against Inter Milan. What do you see as his future this year under Carlo Ancelotti? Does he at least make the bench? I mean, I don't think Julian Green's replacing Robert Lewandowski by any stretch of the imagination, but do we see him on the bench for Bayern this year, or do we see him possibly loaned out to another team?
I think if he was going to be loaned out, it perhaps would have happened by now, so I think we're most likely going to see him stick around, and I think, as I said earlier on, I think Bayern simply don't have any alternatives at the moment. And I mean, sure, you know, the season, the transfer market is still open. You never know these days with how these super clubs buy players. But as things stand, he looks as though he will be the standing reserve for Lewandowski or Thomas Müller if they pick up an injury. one of the most interesting things about Lewandowski, despite his outstanding ability, is that the man never really seems to get injured, which in the modern game is something of a marvel. He throws himself about the pitch, but for large parts of his time at Dortmund and while he's been at Bayern Munich, he just simply doesn't get injured, which has led to the point where Bayern obviously don't feel the need to find someone who can immediately replace him. Julian Green, as you said, played a large part in the pre-season tour. You could perhaps suggest that that's because the likes of some of the key forwards weren't available at the time, but he did play well, and despite the fact that he hasn't really had his break in the first team, and of course he went on loan to Hamburg to little effect, of course, it does seem as though he has talent, at least when he's playing for the reserves and for the youth team as well. He didn't seem to feature in Pep Guardiola's team, but I'm not sure if I would hold that against him. Despite Pep's reputation, at least he didn't really. He wasn't a player who a player. He wasn't a coach that really seemed interested in making an effort to bring blood young players through. He was simply there to win titles, and he needed ready-made stars. Which is why perhaps the likes of Julian Green and there's a whole host of other young players who have decided to move on during their time at Pep, under Pep Guardiola. So Green has stuck around. He hasn't had the greatest of time at Bayern the last couple of seasons, but this in the pre-season he looked sharp. And if the likes of Müller or Lewandowski were to get injured, then he does seem to be the standalone player. And it'd be very interesting to see how he does because, as you said, he has looked sharp this summer.
Yeah, I agree. He was quite impressive. Like I said, from what I saw this season as well. Let's skew even younger. I guess I believe he's a little bit younger, and that's Dortmund's Christian Pulisic, who certainly made strides last year at Dortmund. Managed to make his way onto the U.S. men's national team for the Copa America Centenario. Obviously Dortmund has made some additions in the midfield this transfer window. Where do you see Christian's do you see him scaled back a little bit playtime-wise, or do you see him continue on this upward trend towards possibly starting at Dortmund?
I think this would be really interesting. As you correctly said, he came into the team last season when needed, and he did a remarkable job considering the fact that he really did just seem to come out of nowhere. I know he's been playing very well for the youth team before he came in, hence why Thomas Tuchel and his staff felt he was ready to make the step up. And he did really well last season, and I think that's largely much to do with almost a sensation that built around him almost overnight. And he is genuinely a very talented player. I think there's absolutely every reason to be excited about him. I think, as is quite natural, I think whenever you do have players of US origin, it's quite easy to get excited about them, mm-hmm. Especially if it's a player like Dortmund. But at 17 years old, he's already made remarkable strides. I think the problem is, though, that Thomas Tuchel simply doesn't feel like he can rely on him. He doesn't think it'd be fair to bring Christian Pulisic and ask him to step up and be part of that group to replace Mkhitaryan and Gundogan. Mm-hmm. And that's why, as I've said, we've seen Dortmund sign two or three new wingers to join the wingers they already have. That suggests to me that Christian Pulisic might not be part of Thomas Tuchel's first team plans this season, and that doesn't mean, of course, that he won't be part of the wider squad. I just don't think we're likely to see him step in as we did last season, simply because Tuchel now has so many more options. There was suggestions that he might be loaned out to a Bundesliga team or a Zweite Bundesliga team, which I think would have been really interesting. I think Dortmund came out very recently afterwards saying there's no plans to do that. They're quite happy to keep Pulisic, and that might be the case, and that's absolutely fine, but I think it would be quite something of a travesty if he were to spend much of the season unused when he could be playing for the likes of Hertha Berlin or Mainz or Augsburg and really, picking up experience that he could. Because as we said, he was a talented player, and at 17 years old, he did remarkably well last season when called upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be a disaster to leave him on the bench and have him not see the pitch at all this season. So let's look at the next person I want to ask you about is a person moving into the Bundesliga who recently signed a contract with Hamburg, and that from Union Berlin, that's Bobby Wood, another player who, me personally, I'm very, very high on. I think he should be the starting striker for the U.S. men's national team. And again, a young, talented player. Your thoughts on how Bobby Wood will fare this season?
I think Bobby Wood's probably one of the most interesting transfers that we've seen this summer. He's done a remarkable job in his Zweite Bundesliga, and as you quite rightly say, he does look like one of perhaps the most interesting, talented players from the U.S. recently. He did an outstanding job in the second division for Union Berlin. And he now joins a Hamburg team that themselves actually really interesting as well. You know, we've seen them sign. He's perhaps, it depends how you look at it, but his transfer has actually been slightly overshadowed by the club signing Kostic from Philippe Kostic from Stuttgart, who is an outstanding attacking midfielder from Stuttgart. And he signed him for a record fee. So in Hamburg, he's picking up all the headlines, which might be, you know, a blessing in disguise for Bobby, because Hamburg have had problems with their attacking line for quite some time. They have Lasoga, who was the young player, the next hot thing to come through, and he has done a reasonably good job. He's a goal scorer, he's a target man, but he's not very mobile. He's constantly making comments about how he is fit. He's always fit. He regularly approaches social media and makes it abundantly clear how, you know, well, I don't know how to describe this, well toned he is, perhaps, just because he gets so much hate from the fans who suggest he's overweight. And the simple fact is, he's just not that kind of athlete to get across the pitch. And I think that's why Bobby Wood is quite an interesting player. He's a player who can come in, he has the mobility. And, you know, usually the step up from this 5 Bundesliga to the Bundesliga isn't that great a leap. So if he can score goals in the second division, there's no reason why he can't score goals in the first division. And specifically for this Hamburg team, who I'm very, really excited about, I think there's no reason why he can eventually wrestle that first team spot from Lasoga. There's every chance he may start there from day one, considering Lasoga's frustrations last season. And if he can score half as many goals in the Bundesliga as he did last season for Union Berlin, then he would be considered very much a success for Hamburg. And at just 23 years old, he's got his whole career ahead of him. So I'm very excited to see how he does. It just comes down to whether he can prove himself in the top division, which I'm very optimistic about.
And it's a far cry from 2 years ago, where Hamburg was close to being relegated for, I believe, if I remember correctly, for the first time in their history, correct?
Yeah, they have not been relegated yet. They have. They are called the old dinosaur because they were one of the founding members of the Bundesliga, and they're one of the few ones who haven't been relegated. But they have a manager in Bruno Labbadia, who is, you know, he's a proven Bundesliga coach. He might not be spectacular. He's not going to win you Bundesliga titles or Pokal trophies, but he is going to keep you up. He's done, despite the fact that things weren't great last season for large parts this season, Hamburg look settled, which in the Bundesliga, which really is like the Wild Wild West sometimes, that could be the biggest difference between finishing 17th and finishing 6th or 7th. And I should also mention they've also signed Halinovic from Barcelona, the young 20-year-old who will be attacking midfield, and he looks really, really sharp. So alongside Lewis Holtby and Kostic, I think Bobby Wood really has some outstanding attacking midfielders behind him. So let's hope that he does get the opportunity, because it looks as though if this Hamburg team can perform on the pitch as they look on paper right now, then it seems as though he's going to have a lot of opportunities to do well. And I think Hamburg in general are going to look a lot better than they have in the last few seasons.
Sure. Now, the last two players that I'm going to ask you about are certainly mainstays at their clubs. The first one is central defender John Brooks over at Hertha Berlin. Another fantastic talent. Certainly has separated himself as the best central defender in the United States men's national team. What are your thoughts on John Brooks and his progression to being one of the top central defenders in the league, if I haven't lost you?
No, Jonathan Brooks is, I think it's quite easy to suggest that he's an outstanding player. He's very young as well, as now he's also 23, I think the same age as Bobby Wood. And he's very much become a very, very important part of this Hertha Berlin side. This is a team who looked really good for obviously large parts of the season, as they really seemed to confound any sort of reasoning and push on and challenge in the top four. Now, the thing is, they began to wobble for large parts of the second half of the season, which is to be expected for a team who, A, shouldn't be anywhere near that position in the table, and B, a team that doesn't have the strength and depth to maybe keep at that level for large parts of the season. But I think most of that was simply down to the fact that Jonathan Brooks' injuries. If you actually look at the games he missed out on in the Bundesliga and Hertha's performances when he wasn't there, they very rarely actually maintained that level when he wasn't playing. And his talent and his performances for the capital side didn't go unnoticed. He was linked to Schalke, I believe it was in January, and I think maybe a few English sides as well, if I'm not mistaken. Schalke themselves have since signed Naldo from Wolfsburg as a very, very stopgap. So I think Brooks may be a long-term target for them if he can continue to keep up the performances they did last season. Hertha have been remarkably well to hold on to him, and I think he's not just a good US player, which I think he's also a genuine, real Bundesliga talent. And I don't hope that doesn't sound condescending in any sense. I just mean in the sense that he deserves the recognition as a young player in the Bundesliga, regardless of his nationality. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see if Hertha can hold on to him if he has another good season. But like I said, I think a large proportion of Hertha's impressive season last season was undoubtedly down to him.
Okay. Last player that I want to ask you about is Fabian Johnson over at Borussia Mönchengladbach. One of my favorite players, in my opinion, the best American player right now, with all respect to Michael Bradley, that I know a lot of people put him there. I feel like Fabian Johnson offers the U.S. men's national team something that really nobody else does. DeAndre Yedlin does to an extent on the other side, but not quite the control that Fabian Johnson has. So for, you know, just to give us the quick run of, about as to what you expect out of Fabian Johnson and his contribution to Mönchengladbach this season.
Yeah, I would echo your sentiment very much so. I think he's an outstanding footballer. I had the pleasure of interviewing him earlier in the year, actually, and he was an exceptionally modest man. The projection of his career, if you perhaps ignore a wobble at Wolfsburg, which wasn't really much to do with him, suggests that he's a player who really doesn't seem to have a ceiling in terms of his potential. He's 28 years old. I don't want to suggest he's some 19-year-old wonder kid, but he's very good at what he does, and I think that's what makes him so viable to Borussia Mönchengladbach. He was signed as a player who can really, he was a jack of all trades, but he's a player who can actually do anything in terms on the wing, and I think that's something that his coach Andy Schubert at Gladbach is, you know, finds exceptionally valuable. Gladbach are. Schubert came in to replace Lucien Favre in what was largely considered an impossible task, despite Favre leaving the club last season under what seems like all sorts of whispers and conspiracies to suggesting that it was a complete breakdown in the relationship. Schubert has came in. He came in last season and he really did settle things very quickly, and he seemed to not only keep the club, the squad, at the level they were at under Favre, but actually move on further. And as we've seen since then, he's pushed his own, his own thoughts on the team and the way that they play the game. They now play perhaps, you know, sometimes with a back three with wing backs, but most importantly, they just played a super attacking style of football, and that really does seem to play into Fabian Johnson's strengths. I mean, you can play right back. I mean, you would know far better than me which position he's best at for the US national team, but from what I've seen in the Bundesliga, he seems, even if he's playing as a wing back or a right back, his talents are undoubtedly going forward, and with Andre Schubert and the way this Gladbach team now play, he looks like one of the key players because, you know, this team as a whole are now playing to his strength, which is attacking wing play.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, that I was going to say that right wing back position, I think for him is absolutely his strongest position, and I think when he's there he shines. So as a Juventus fan, I would love to see him on the right side there myself. But so before we let you go, we have to have you make a couple of predictions, I would say, for the season. The first one would be your champion. Should we just stamp Bayern Munich, or do you think it's not quite that simple?
You really put me on the spot now. I think I'm very tempted to go along with Rafa and go ahead and say Dortmund, but I think what we're most likely going to see is we're going to see Dortmund really, really push Bayern this season. I think the league title is going to be won within about 3 or 5 points, but I'm going to go ahead and say Bayern Munich because it's far easier to say that than to say Dortmund. But despite how much I'd love to say Dortmund could go on and will win the league this season, there's still too many unknown factors. But I think they really, really will cause a lot of troubles for Bayern this season. I think it's going to be fantastic for that regard.
I hope so, because that will be fantastic. And the top goal scorer in the league when all is said and done, will it be Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang? Will it be Lewandowski? Or do you have a third option?
I have a feeling you want me to say a specific American striker. They might play for Hamburg now.
That would be nice, but I'm not even that faithful.
I think think Bobby Wood would genuinely be up there, but at the moment there's three players, perhaps four, who really, three, who really stand out, and that are Lewandowski, Aubameyang, and Chicharito, and of course, to a lesser extent, Thomas Müller. And I can't see anything past Lewandowski right now. In my opinion, he's the best number nine in the world, and Bayern team has seemed built around him at the moment. I really can't see him letting up that pedigree any sign. So I'll go ahead and say the Polish international will be the top one, but I really do think we'll see someone like Bobby Wood push up and perhaps finish fourth in that specific roster.
Oh boy, I thought I was going to be making a bold prediction, because when we give our predictions here after the phone call, I was actually going to say that I think Bobby Wood could finish in the top five in scoring in the Bundesliga. So you've stolen a little bit of my thunder there, but I think it would be fantastic if we saw that. That's for sure, and it's going to be a great Bundesliga season. Especially, I agree with you that I think Dortmund is really going to push the limits on Bayern Munich this year, which is going to make for a race that we haven't seen in a few years. And certainly going to be an exciting season. So, Stefan, I do want to thank you for joining us tonight and helping us break down the Bundesliga. It's been a wonderful, wonderful interview, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon.
That was an absolute pleasure for me too, gents. So thanks again, and I'd love to come back on anytime.
Fantastic. Have a good night.
Thanks, guys.
And that was Stefan Bienkowski from the Washington Post and the New York Times. I mixed them up. Fantastic. I want to go to you guys real quick and actually get your thoughts on, let's go right to the champion. Let's kind of hash that out real quick. I think we're all kind of in the neighborhood of saying Bayern, but I really do agree with Stefan and almost to a point with Rafa where that Dortmund side is going to be right there. And really for me, I thought Dortmund missed a great opportunity, and I even said it on this show back in March, where they literally had Dortmund in their sights, and they could have pulled it to within 2 points of getting into the title, and it would have been a fantastic run down to the end, but they didn't get it done that day. So I'm going to take Bayern Munich to win the Bundesliga, but I think it is going to be very, very close, and I don't think we'll have a champion until sometime the end of April at best. Rob, you cover the Bundesliga for us. What are your thoughts on the champ?
Yeah, I just can't see anyone besides seeing us five-time?
I think it's five.
Oh, we're going to see a five-time consecutive champion. We're going to see Bayern Munich win it.
Yeah, I think they've won the last four. I'd have to go and do a little homework, but I think they've won the last four. So, Mike, your thoughts on who we're going to see at the podium at the end of it all? Or we might have lost Mike. I know Mike was having a little bit of Skype trouble. Hopefully he's still here, but if not, we'll try to reconnect him.
He's on.
Yeah, I do see that he's on, but for some reason we're not getting him. Mute. So, hopefully he's on mute. I think what we'll probably do is, I think he's having trouble again. So let's try and reconnect Mike and see if we can get his opinion here momentarily. Let's go to the top goal scorer, Rob. I'm going to give it to you first, seeing that I gave my champ first. I'm going to let you go first and see what you say. So let's talk about the top goal scorer. Lewandowski, Aubameyang, Thomas Müller, Bobby Wood. I mean, who do you got?
Well, I'm surprised you haven't mentioned Chicharito, but yeah. No, I'm going to go with the Polish international, Robert Lewandowski, as the top goal scorer.
I think it's going to be really, really close. I think just to be the contrarian, I'm going to take Mike. Are you there, Mike?
I am.
Hey, there we are. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So let's rewind it just briefly. Your champion, Bayern Munich?
Right.
Yep, okay. And your top goal scorer, Rob's gone with Robert Lewandowski. I'm going to put it in your lap.
Well, I guess Stefan meant that Robert Lewandowski is the best number nine in the world because Sergio Aguero doesn't wear number nine.
I think the fact that your Skype fell off there was probably a blessing.
Yeah, I'm going with Robert Lewandowski.
You're gonna go
with
Lewandowski as well. I'm gonna be the contrarian. I'm definitely gonna take Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang in this one. He had a fantastic season last year. I think as long as he stays there. I mean, obviously we've still got a little bit of time in the transfer window, and Susie Schaff would tell us that
you know, Dortmund has way too much money. They don't need to sell anybody. So I don't think they'll sell him, but just in case, you know, I'm going to take Aubameyang to take the goal scoring title. I'll be the contrarian there. I was going to make the bold prediction that that Bobby Wood would finish in the top five in goal scoring in the Bundesliga this year. Kid's an immense talent. He's going to get some help at Hamburg. They made some nice moves, and really to move themselves back up the table from that the brink of relegation a couple of years ago, like we had mentioned. So I think he's gonna do really, really well. And I do hope that with all the additions at Dortmund, that Christian Pulisic still gets himself onto the pitch, because it would be nice to see him grow a little bit more. Mike, I'm going to send it over to you because you have your best 11 for the Bundesliga that we can chat about for a minute. So if you wouldn't mind giving us the 11.
All right. Well, it's pretty much all Bayern Munich in goal. I'm using a 4-4-2 for the Bayern or for the Bundesliga. Manuel Neuer.
Okay. No argument.
Defense. Philipp Lahm.
Okay.
Boateng.
Okay.
Hard argument. Hummels.
Mm-hmm.
And Alaba.
Yeah, David Alaba. I don't have any arguments there.
Either.
Yeah. And you're talking about a Boateng who is one of the top central defenders in the world. I agree 100%. Let's go to the midfield.
All right. Hold on one second.
I mean, Lahm is getting up in age, but I still don't think there's, you know, in terms of overall quality in the pitch, there are very few people in the world that are better than Philipp Lahm, even though he's getting a little older.
All right. In the midfield, I have another oldie in Arjen Robben.
Okay.
Arturo Vidal.
Vidal, sure.
Götze.
Mario Götze, yeah.
And Thiago Alcantara.
Alcantara. I would put Marco Reus in there instead of Götze. I think Götze, for all the good, is, you know, he finds a way to give you a little bad. Robin, the only issue...
Back to Dortmund this year, though.
Yeah, no, I know it. Robin, for me, the worry with Arjen Robben is that he's often injured, you know, almost like Frank Ribery. I saw Ribery play this summer, and he looked fantastic. He looked like the Ribery of old. I can't stand him. I know, but, you know, for those guys that are often injured, how long can they maintain that, you know, that level of play? Robben, when he is healthy, is phenomenal. But when is he ever healthy these days, it seems? So I would make sure Marco Reus is in that midfield for sure for me. Rob, how about you?
I wouldn't have to agree with anything else. I think it would be good.
Yeah. So, and your two strikers? Tough to choose. Well, tough to choose over Lewandowski and Aubameyang, right?
That's them.
Yeah. I don't see Chicharito cracking that top three. I don't even, again, with Mueller, the question of age, and I just think Aubameyang and Lewandowski just offer way too much quality ahead of Thomas Mueller. So I think, granted he's been doing it for a long time, but I just think that those options are better than Thomas Mueller, and I'd have zero disagreement with you. So,
all right, so we'll get them up on the website, right?
Perfect. Yeah. So, so the plan is we're going to post our best 11s as we've indicated here on the show, for each of the five leagues that we cover: Ligue 1, the Bundesliga, the Serie A, La Liga, and the EPL. And we'll have that up on our website by the end of the week. So if you guys get a chance to hit the website, lowlimitfootball.com, leave us a comment on the page as to what you think of the different teams. Did we get it right? Did we get it wrong? Who would you put in a certain place? Like I said, Marco Reus tonight, you know, would you agree with Marco Reus? Would you agree with what we've given you as the World 11? So, definitely visit the website and take a look at that. So. Mike, I'm going to leave the microphone with you, sir, because I'm going to have you take us through our leagues and highlights with mention of the week ahead as well.
All right. I wasn't quite ready, so just give me a second here.
No problem. I was going to have you kick off the MLS for some reason in the summer shuffle. MLS went from the last league we covered of the week to the first league we covered, which is okay because it fits into the rotation nicely no matter which end we do it. But, it just kind of gives you the lead.
Okay, my internet is not cooperating, so just hold on. Sorry about this. No, live radio.
Live radio, that's how we roll, right?
Okay, so Let me make sure I got the right week here, and I do. Okay, so our game of the week this week was New York City FC versus the LA Galaxy. We predicted a draw. The actual score was, or actually, no, we predicted Galaxy to win.
Yes, I believe
2-1. The Galaxy to win 2-1, and the actual score was 1-0 for New York City. Controversial goal. I think it was David Silva, wasn't it? Sorry, my internet's so slow here, guys.
I don't remember if it was David Villa or not.
Yeah, it's just, I believe it was David Villa. I'm sorry, like I said, live radio. Yeah, it was David Villa in the 6th minute. And that was the score, 1-0. Like I said, we predicted 2-1 for LA Galaxy, so wrong result there. This week is, Toronto versus Montreal, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Sorry about that. This is the second of 3 times these teams are meeting this season. Last time they met in April, it was 2-0 for Toronto over Montreal. They'll play again in October, so on Friday, I'll post our prediction for this one. And again, it's Toronto at Montreal, Saturday, 7:30 in Toronto.
Perfect. Rob, La Liga, now that we've finally opened for business there with a couple of goals, why don't you give us this past week's match and the upcoming week?
Oh, yeah, of course. And to open the La Liga, we had a good match that all of us, I believe, saw. It was Atletico Madrid taking on recently promoted Alaves in the final match of the La Liga campaign for Sunday. We predicted a 2-0 victory for Atletico. It ended in a 1-1 draw. Both goals happening in the dying minutes of the match. Goal from Kevin Gamero in the 92nd minute off a penalty, and a fantastic, wonderful goal from Mando Garcia in the 94th minute, literally seconds from the end of the match. It just blows my mind every time I see that goal. Right, Joe?
It was a dramatic finish. It was definitely a well-struck goal, too. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, of course. It's welcome back to La Liga, all of us.
Sure. So, who do we got? What do we got going on this week?
Oh yeah, we got a good game on this week. We have Villarreal taking on Sevilla Sunday at 4:15. Sevilla are looking to bounce back from their dramatic 6-4 victory on Saturday against Espanyol, while Villarreal will look to get their first win following their 1-1 draw against Granada.
And you want to put a score on it?
I do indeed, and I think that we are going to see more goals in this one. I think it's going to be a Sevilla win, 4-2.
4-2, wow. And Jorge Sampaoli throwing defense squarely out the window, I think, with that prediction. That's Sunday at 4:15 p.m. Let's go into this week's matchup in Ligue 1, which our featured matchup was Lyon-Caen. We had predicted a 2-1 victory, or I had predicted a 2-1 victory for Lyon in this one, and got a 2-0 victory. Two Alexander Lacazette penalty kick goals, one in the 31st minute and the other in the 96th minute to add a little insult to injury. But like I'd mentioned in the prelude or the beginning of the show, Alexander Lacazette leading everybody in Europe right now with 5 goals on the season in 2 matches. And I know he's been a target for Arsene Wenger at Arsenal. I got to think, like I'd said earlier, that this guy gets more expensive by the minute. The question is going to be, is will Lyon actually sell him, or are they just going to drag them along for the season? So our matchup coming up this week, obviously keeping with the Alexander Lacazette watch, keeping an eye on the transfer window, because I know Mike loves the name, we've got Lyon playing this weekend on the road Saturday at 11 a.m. against Dijon. Newcomer to the French league this season. I'm going to take Lyon in a 2-0 victory in this one. I think that continues. I'm not going to give Lacazette both goals. I will give him one. I think Nabil Fekir will probably get the other one. But I think a 2-0 victory is certainly the way this one's going to go. But that's Saturday at 11 a.m. Mike, how about the Premier League this week? What's going on? Or did we lose him again? I think we might have lost Mike again. So, just quickly while Mike is reconnecting.
All right, there you are. I'm not sure about my connection here. Can you guys?
Yeah, I think we're losing Mike's connection there. So let's reconnect Mike. And while we're doing that, I'm going to go ahead and give the Serie A from this week. So this week's featured matchup that we had given everybody was Juventus-Fiorentina. I had actually taken Juventus-Fiorentina to be a 1-1 draw. I didn't think Juventus would get off to as quick a start as they did. They did manage to eke out a 2-1 victory in this one. We had an opening goal by Sammy Kadira from a great ball from Giorgio Chiellini in the 37th minute to open the scoring on this one. But then Kalinic, who had a great season last year for Fiorentina, tied it up 1-1 in the 70th minute, only to see the quote-unquote fat guy, right, Rob? Gonzalo Higuain pick up a poacher's goal in the 75th minute, right place at the right time. It was a fantastic goal, and it was enough to put the old lady over the top and win them their first match of the season 2-1. So this match of the week this week is going to be another great match to watch. It's going to be Napoli versus AC Milan Saturday, 2:45 p.m. AC Milan was fantastic this weekend. They managed a 3-2 victory over Torino. Really amazing because they were up, I believe, 3-0 at one point, but had a with three Carlos Bacca goals. But then Torino mounted the comeback and actually drew a penalty in the closing seconds of the match, only to have Gigi Donnarumma save AC Milan, save the 3 points for them. So they're going to have to take that to Napoli, who eked out a 2-2 draw over the weekend, I believe against Empoli, if I remember correctly. I'm really recalling this from memory. I don't have the stats up in front of me. And they had to come back from, they were down 2-0 in that one to manage a comeback and at least eke out a point. So in this particular one, Napoli's at home opening. I'm going to take a draw in this one. I'm going to take a 2-2 draw. I think they're both going to kind of feel each other out, and we'll have to see what happens from there. But let's. I know Mike is still trying to reconnect, so I'm going to just do the quick EPL for him. Match of the week last week was Leicester City Arsenal. The simulator had predicted a 2-1 Arsenal victory. We actually got a 0-0 draw in this one. It was the first 0-0. Of the season for the EPL in this one, so not much to talk about there. Statistically speaking, it was 60-40 possession in favor of Arsenal. Arsenal was had favorable shots 13-8. Shots on goal were 4-1 in favor of Arsenal as well. So nothing getting by either keeper Schmeichel or Peter Cech in this one for the 0-0 draw. Our match of the week in England this week. And again, Rob will give us the, I'm sorry, not Rob, Mike will give us the simulation later on in the week, is going to be Tottenham-Liverpool, which should be another great one. Liverpool looking to bounce back this week after, a 2-0 loss on the weekend. Tottenham, they're going to play each other on Saturday, 7:30 a.m. Mike, are you there?
I am.
Good. I've just kind of given the Tottenham-Liverpool. I don't know if you had any special statistics.
They played twice last year, obviously, and drew both games 0-0 at White Hart Lane and 1-1 at Anfield.
And we will get a simulation on this one on Friday, right? I would imagine. I'll go with a yes on that one. Okay, I know Mike's internet is kind of acting up again. Mike, if you're still there, do you have the MLS for us?
Yeah, am I here?
Yep, you're still here. Mike, are you there? We did the MLS.
We did the MLS already.
Yep. So Rob, I've got to give it back to you, my friend, because we've got Bundesliga matches to talk about.
That we do, and we're going to go for our match of the week, which is going to be the first match of the new Bundesliga season as Bayern Munich take on Werder Bremen on Friday at 2:30. It's going to be a dramatic matchup for both teams, but I think that comfortably, especially since Werder Bremen are losing a player like Max Kruse, that Bayern should have no problems to get the 3 points and start the Bundesliga well.
Yep.
With a 3-1 win for Bayern.
3-1 victory for Bayern in that one, so we'll have to keep an eye on that one this weekend. And that'll actually open our weekend matchups. With obviously the Friday kickoff at 2:30. We've also, if I remember correctly, we've got Champions League this week. We've got Europa qualifiers this week. Rob, real quickly, I didn't check. Do we have Sudamericana this week as well?
We do have Sudamericana this week.
Okay, so we've got a few things. I am trying to get Mike back. Hopefully we'll get him back soon because he has the trivia answer And I can kind of repeat it off memory quickly. We have five capped international EPL players.
Joe, I just want to mention one thing. I think referring to the Suramericana, I think we're going to have to keep an eye out on Atletico Nacional, who are currently in the second, the second stage of the Suramericana, okay, and could be looking to be the undisputed South American champions.
Pull the double like River Plate did a couple years ago.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so we'll have to. I mean, obviously, in the Sudamericana, we're still quite early in the competition, but
keep an eye on them.
Certainly there. Yeah, certainly there to watch. So, again, Mike's trivia question was: there are five capped players who have won championships in the EPL from Algeria, Bulgaria, Romania, Switzerland, and Jamaica. That was the trivia question. Name the five players. I've got the one I'm definite on is the easy one, which is last year's Jamaica, which is Wes Morgan, with the title at Leicester City, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I think.
And the only CONCACAF player to do it.
And the only CONCACAF player to do it as well. I think Mike is back. Mike, I think Mike might be back. Let's see if we can get Mr. Mike back into this conversation. To help us out. Mike, I think you're alive and well.
Yeah, not really well, so.
All right. Well, I just recapped the trivia question. Five international players who have won championships in the EPL. Algeria, Bulgaria, Romania, Switzerland, and Jamaica. I gave Wes Morgan as the Jamaica one, which I think was the absolute layup.
All right.
Algeria.
I got one.
Okay, which one do you got?
Riyad Mahrez.
Yep.
Riyad Mahrez for Algeria?
That's correct.
Okay. And then I'm lost.
I got it. All right. Bulgaria, Berbatov?
Yeah.
Romania. Pantelimon.
No, Pantelimon is he's Belgian.
No, he's Romanian. Mike?
He is. Romanian. That's correct.
Oh, I thought he was Belgian.
Nah, he's Romanian. And the last country, what was it?
Switzerland.
I'm lost on that one.
Gökhan Inler.
Inler. Leicester.
Three Leicesters there. They filled out three of the five for us.
Three Leicester, one from City and one from United.
That's right. Berbatov.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So. And City for Bantamon.
Excellent question. Excellent question, sir.
Thank you.
All right, so without any further ado, I'll hit the closing music and run through our closing stuff to lead us into next week. What do you boys think?
Let's do it.
All right, coming up. So for episode 130 of Low Limit Football, I can't believe we've done this 130 times. Special thanks again to Stefan Biankowski from New York Times and Washington Post for helping us break down the Bundesliga tonight. Next week, we've got two special guests joining us. We have Chris Gluck joining us from the Yellow Card Podcast and John Frusciante from the First Team Podcast to talk a little New York Cosmos NASL. Also want to mention that our guest list for our anniversary show is growing. We added this week Ali Bender from ESPN. That's going to be fantastic to have her on, and we're going to talk the EPL with her. So very excited that the guest list is growing. Also, the anniversary show is going to start at 5 p.m. instead of 6 p.m. Eastern, because we're going to be filling up with quite a few guests, and we're going to have a pretty great show for it. So, for episode 130 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
And I'm Mike Orr.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.